Thanks. I'm really pleased to be here today, and I'm especially happy to see so many people at a session on climate change. We didn't have this many people at climate change sessions last year, so I just want to start by asking, how many of you actually work on climate change in your day jobs? Oh my goodness. Okay. So I'm preaching to the choir, but what I'm going to talk about is really how I see climate change being related to as one of the biggest challenges of the century, to what else we do in public health, and most particularly to how climate change is related to what I see as another of the greatest challenges that we face, which is health equity. And I see these two challenges as being very, very deeply related, and I'm going to walk through a complicated framework that has helped us understand all the different ways in which these things are linked, starting with the climate health pathway that has been alluded to in the prior two presentations, so I'll walk through it very quickly. But basically, greenhouse gas emissions, heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere, come from our human activities, driving, flying, eating a lot of meat, how we consume, what kind of energy we use, and these greenhouse gas emissions result in the impacts that previous speakers alluded to, variability in precipitation, warming, glacier and snowpack loss, sea level rise, ocean acidification. But these global climate impacts actually manifest themselves as local climate impacts, coastal flooding, decreased snowpack, and parenthetically, the last time they measured the snowpack in California, which is part of the Southwest, it was at 0% of normal. It's not increasing everywhere in the Sierras after our drought. Extreme weather like hurricanes and typhoons and severe rain events, extreme heat, wildfires, drought, these are all of the local climate impacts that we experience in our communities. And the health impacts really come from the way these local climate impacts affect our natural systems and have socioeconomic impacts. So, for example, warming increases the risk for microbial contamination, thus increasing the risk for food and waterborne disease. Flooding often is associated with toxics and sewage contamination of water. Drought is associated with declining crop yields. And in turn, that creates job loss, it creates food insecurity, and it creates, as a result, other impacts that I'll mention briefly in a few minutes. Changes in the distribution of vector-borne disease, and climate-related pressures on food, water, and shelter force displacement and migration, which in turn lead to increases in the risk of armed conflict and cause stress and depression. So the health impacts of climate change aren't new diseases. Rather, I see climate change as sort of a threat multiplier. And each of these climate impacts has many, many kinds of health impacts. So just I'll turn to heat just for a moment. The projections in California are that the temperature will rise 4 to 8 degrees Fahrenheit by the end of the century. And I know that doesn't sound like a lot, and when I'm in a cold place like California or where I live in the Bay Area, the idea of having the Bay Area be more like San Diego, it's kind of like, wow, that sounds great. But in reality, heat is the weather event that already causes the most deaths in the U.S. Those deaths are rising substantially, and we continue to see heat events with thousands and thousands of deaths. We also know that the projected heat is so severe that we actually, according to the IPCC, may see very, very significant declines in labor productivity by the end of this century, with huge impacts on people's ability to feed themselves, to do construction work, and so on. Higher temperatures have many impacts on air pollution. Ozone rises with increasing temperature. Warming temperatures cause higher pollen production. Warmer temperatures cause drying out of the soil. And in California now, we're having an epidemic of valley fever that is probably in part associated with the drought and its impact on drying of the soil. What about the drought? The drought is, we have the worst drought in recorded history in California right now. There's no assurance that it will go away this winter. We have many wells in the Central Valley and other parts of rural California that are going dry. And newsflash, we can't survive without water. So we have literally hundreds of families in California now who are reduced to relying on bottled water or having water trucked into giant tanks in front of the local school because there's no water in their wells. Thousands of acres have been fallowed across California. Ranchers have reduced their livestock herds. And what this means is that tens of thousands of workers are out of jobs in agriculture, in food processing, in food transport. Food prices are rising as a result of this drought and the drought in the Midwest in 2011-2012. And we know that that means rising food insecurity, which in turn is associated with increasing risks for cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and obesity. Firefighters are facing explosive wildfires that they've never seen before, risking their lives, risking homes, and also sending out plumes of smoke that can travel 1,000 miles, spreading very bad air quality over very large areas for weeks at a time. We're also seeing an increase in West Nile virus as a result of the drought because of stagnant pools of water in sewage pipes, for example, in the county in which Disneyland resides. Climate impacts disproportionately low-income people, people of color, and people with pre-existing disease. Thus, we call it the climate gap. So if you live in an area with ozone and you already have higher risks for asthma, higher levels of ozone make your risk worse. If you're poor and you don't have a car, you're not going to get out and evacuate when there's a hurricane. If you're poor, you can't rebuild or relocate after a hurricane or another extreme weather event. If you're a low-income person, you can't adjust to rising food prices resulted to the impacts on crop yields of climate. If you have asthma or heart disease or obesity or you take certain medications or you're very young or very old or you're socially isolated, these are all things that increase your risk for climate impacts. So climate change isn't our only environmental thing that we need to be concerned about. We have dead zones in the ocean, we have air pollution, we have contaminated water aquifers, soil depletion, topsoil depletion, deforestation. These are all problems that also have their own health impacts and that either exacerbate or are exacerbated by climate health impacts. So I am going to leave climate change for a moment and talk about health inequities. I don't think I need to tell this crowd that the conditions in which we live, work, learn, and play, our physical, social, economic, and services environments, really shape our health behaviors, our opportunities, and resources for health, and our health impacts, our health outcomes, both individually and in our communities. These determinants cluster together, thus the place matters theme of this conference. We have large numbers of low-income people of color living in the neighborhoods on the left and large numbers of white and wealthy people living in the neighborhoods on the right. And that's why we have these persistent inequities with differences in life expectancy among neighborhoods of up to 15 years. What does this have to do with climate change and the climate gap? Climate vulnerability is the degree to which a person or a community is susceptible to the adverse impacts of climate change. Climate resilience is essentially the flip side of that. It's the capacity to respond effectively to climate change and still thrive. And it's the intersection of vulnerability and resilience that really determines how severe the impacts of climate are on the health of individuals or communities. Well, what are the contributors to climate vulnerability and resilience? there's two key contributors. One is our living conditions. The same physical, social, and economic environments that determine health and health inequities outcomes are key factors in climate vulnerability and resilience. The second is pre-existing health status. So those with better health status are more likely to have higher resilience in the face of climate change. Those that already have chronic illnesses are more likely to have higher levels of vulnerability. Other environmental impacts also impact climate resilience and vulnerability. So if you live in a place where your well is already contaminated with nitrates, then when drought leads to a concentration of those contaminants in the well, you're at even higher risk than you were before. Something really important is missing so far from this picture, and that is, what's the cause of living conditions, other environmental impacts, and greenhouse gas emissions? And it turns out, when you look at this, that it is exactly the same systems that are really at the root cause responsible for all three of these impacts. It is our transportation system, our energy system, our food and agriculture system, our economic system. And these systems are all created by our institutions, our governments, our schools, our large NGOs, our corporations, impacted in turn by the way that we view race and class and our values in our society. So what do we do? Well, we all know that there's a broad range of interventions, a whole spectrum of prevention in public health, and similarly, there's a whole spectrum of prevention in climate change. We do disaster recovery, just like we do medical care. We do adaptation, build seawalls, the same way as we try and provide mold remediation in houses. We can do education so people reduce their carbon footprints, the same way that we provide diet and physical activity counseling. All of these interventions have potential health co-benefits or potential health co-harms, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. But just as we know that in public health, the most effective interventions, the ones with the biggest impact on population health, are those that intervene upstream to address the root causes of illness. So is that true with climate change. And that means that to address climate change and health inequities, we really need to be addressing these systems and the institutional power and decision-making processes and social inequities that shape those decisions. So what are some of the systems and the changes that would be the most health beneficial? Active transportation, there's three ways to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. One is with low carbon fuels, one is with fuel efficiency, and electric vehicles is sort of a low carbon fuels plus. Or you can do, those all reduce respiratory and cardiovascular disease from air pollution. The third leg of the stool is active transportation. And if we use active transportation to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we also get the benefits of reducing noise, reducing infrastructure costs, reducing community severance, and most importantly, increasing physical activity. None of the other transportation climate strategies get you physical activity. Those impacts can be huge. And this is data that Neil Mazlish from California Department of Public Health produced in concert with our Southern California Association of Governments, the Regional Transportation Planning Agency there. If you increased from an average of 4, which is the current average, to 19 minutes a day in active transportation, you would get a 12% reduction in cardiovascular disease, 12% reduction in diabetes, 6% reduction in dementia, decreases in depression, breast cancer, colon cancer. These are huge, huge public health impacts. They rival what we've done with tobacco control. So clearly, if we want to reduce health impacts of transportation, the best way to go is with active transportation. If we move to clean energy, we get big reductions in air pollution, and concomitant reductions in asthma, cardiovascular disease, and adverse adverse reproductive outcomes. Eating less meat and moving to sustainable local food systems. We don't just reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but we could reduce pesticide use and related illness, synthetic fertilizer use and related water contamination, antibiotic use and related antibiotic resistance, soil erosion, loss of biodiversity, and we could reduce obesity, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, a variety of cancers. Urban greening as a strategy to increase resilience in the face of warming climates, the same thing. We could get many, many co-benefits. So not every climate intervention strategy is beneficial. Some are potentially harmful. The first generation of biofuels led to displacement of food crops and a significant increase in food prices, most notably in Mexico, where there's actually riots over the increase in tortilla prices. If we implement market mechanisms to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, like cap and trade, we run the risk of maintaining high pollution levels in fence-lined communities rather than forcing stationary sources like refineries to reduce their emissions, and thus we might reduce greenhouse gas emissions but increase or maintain unacceptable levels of health inequities. Right now, we're pumping groundwater like crazy in California as an adaptation to the drought, leading to land subsidence that puts at risk critical infrastructure like levees. So I went through this very quickly. It will soon be up on the Public Health Institute website. I hope it just triggers some thoughts about the complex interrelationships between climate change, health, and health inequities and other environmental damages. And I want to turn quickly to talk about why we have to take action on climate change now. We can still make a difference. The world's scientists agree that we're locked into some amount of climate change because greenhouse gas emissions persist in the atmosphere for a long time. But if we reduce our emissions now, we have a substantially different picture in the future, and this just shows what it looks like for heat. This is from the IPCC, with and without substantial mitigation. So we are the only ones sitting in this room that actually have the ability to change what heat looks like in the future for our kids and our grandchildren. Unfortunately, our greenhouse gas emissions are going in the wrong direction. They continue to rise. Michael mentioned that they're now at the highest level in at least 800,000 years. Just to put that in perspective, Homo sapiens started evolving 200,000 years ago. So we're all living in a planet now that is different than the planet on which our ancestors evolved. The world scientists agree that we have to stay below 2 degrees centigrade rise above pre-industrial temperatures to be, quote, safe. Many people think that's too high given the changes we're already seeing at 1 degree. And IPCC calculated the Earth's carbon budget. How much carbon can we pump into the atmosphere and still have a reasonable chance of staying below 2 degrees centigrade? That amount is close to 800 billion gigatons of carbon, or that's a billion metric tons, and we've already used up about two-thirds of it. And if we continue emitting carbon at the same rate that we're currently emitting it, we will just blow through that budget in the next 30 years. Last month, Fiona Godley, who's the editor of the British Medical Journal, called on the World Health Organization to declare that climate change is a health emergency, and we need to treat it as such. We really need to think about how do we put climate, health, and equity into everything that we're doing and into all of our policy conversations. So in summary, climate change affects our health. It exacerbates health inequities. We have to act now to transform our systems to prevent climate chaos. We have a personal, professional, and moral responsibility to take action on climate change. The choice is ours. We have solutions. We have the technology now to move to a clean energy economy. We know how to make our cities more friendly for bicycling and for walking. We know how to make our cities more energy efficient and more water efficient. We know how to make our cities more heat resilient. We know how to kick the fossil fuel habit. But what's missing is the social and the political will to make the systems changes that we need to make to promote health equity and sustainability. There is a lot that you can do. You can join the U.S. Climate and Health Alliance. I'll tell you more about that in just a moment. You can support local, state, and federal climate action policies, support the U.S. EPA Clean Power Plant rules. You can find on the Alliance website a letter to sign on to support that. You can support state action. The fossil fuel industry, the oil companies now are waging a malicious campaign against implementation of California's climate rules. They've got Latina families on television and at the gas pump talking about, quote, the hidden gas tax, where the tagline is the young Latino girl of 7 or 8 saying, there goes my college education. That's outrageous. It's outrageous that our public universities and our public pension funds are sinking billions of dollars into supporting the fossil fuel industry. Join the students on your campuses and unions that are fighting to get public money out of fossil fuels, including fossil fuel subsidies. You can fight expansion of fossil fuel production. We know we have a carbon budget. Why are we fracking for oil and gas, especially when we're risking an increasingly precious groundwater supply? Fight for more funding for active transportation. Work with labor unions to support a just transition away from fossil fuels. So most importantly, we need everyone to really speak out on this issue every day. Everyone's working on very important issues, some of which seem more urgent than climate change. But we don't actually have time to wait to take action on climate change. And that means that everyone that knows about climate change has to add this to every conversation with your colleagues, your family, your friends, your communities, your policymakers, decision makers in your own agencies, and talk to them about why climate change is such an important health issue and how taking action on climate change can really help promote healthy people, healthy places, and a healthy planet. If you want to get involved, I invite you to join us at the Climate and Health Alliance meeting, which will be later today at Tommy's Wine Bar. Thank you.